Okay, so we are holding on Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, about 15 lines from the bottom or so, about two dots, line begins Moideh. Good morning, Ayleb. Okay, so Kuf Zayin Amud Beis by the two dots, about 15 lines from the bottom. The Mishnah had said that if a person traps any of the the Mishnah had distinguished between the Shmona Shrotzim, the eight Shrotzim that are listed in the Torah, where if a person traps them, then he's Chayev, as opposed to other Shrotzim or Ramasim. A person traps them, it depends whether it's Lotzorech or not. Depends whether he has a need for it or not. Why we distinguish between the Shmona Shrotzim? So we mentioned yesterday that Tosfos says a reason, since we talked about in the Gemara yesterday, the Shmona Shrotzim have skins, which to a certain extent which are separate than their flesh, and with some of them even the skins for that reason are not metame like the flesh would. So therefore people would trap them for their skins. Other Rishonim give a different reason also, which I didn't mention yesterday, which is that the Shmona Shrotzim are not dangerous creatures. None of them are likely to harm people. So if a person is trapping them, it must be because he has... So people don't trap them like you would, for example, snakes or scorpions or bugs or whatever, in order to get rid of them, because there'd be no particular reason to. They trap them in order to use them for some purpose or other, whether as pets or whether for their skins, like Tosfos says, or for some other purpose. As opposed to other Shrotzim or Amasim, more typically a person would trap them because they want to get rid of them or whatever. Okay, anyway. So we said with other creatures, if you trap them with tzorech, then you chayev, and if not, then you potter. So the Gemara says, man tana, which tana is it that would say that you chayev for trapping them? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Rav Shimon. That would be according to Rav Shimon. Damar Malacha, she'en tzricha l'guf ha-potter aleha, who says, as we've said many times in the Masechta, that if you have a malacha, she'en tzricha l'guf, good morning, Pinchas, if you do a malacha that is not necessary for its own sake, which we've talked many times before about what malacha shein tzricha l'gufa is, either that it means it's not done for the same purpose as in the Mishkan, which is Tosfos' definition, or Rashi and various other Rishonim give Rashi gives a different explanation, and other Rishonim give an explanation vaguely similar to Rashi's, that you're doing it because it's a situation you don't want to be in. You would rather, for example, this animal wasn't here and you wouldn't have to get rid of it in the first place, rather than that you have to do it now, or that you're doing it in order to remove a hezek, whatever it is. The point is, so Reb Shimon would say that you're potter Allah, so therefore, according to him, you're trapping, let's say, for example, a snake. You're not doing it because you need the animal like you would trap an animal that you're going to eat, for example. You're doing it in order to get rid of it. So that would be malacha shein tzricha l'gufa. And according to Reb Shimon, you'd be potter for it. As opposed to Reb Yehuda would say you'd be chayev. Okay, the Gemara says, ikka demasni laha. Then there are those who learn that what Rav is saying is actually referring to a different case. Namely, we discussed this yesterday, hamefis mursa b'shabbos. If a person opens up a boil or blister or whatever on Shabbos, it depends why he's doing it and how he does it. Im lasis lapeh, if he's doing it in order to make an opening for it that is going to stay open, which then on the one hand the pus can drain out, and on the other hand you have air can come in to help heal it. So then chayev, then he'd be chayev because then he's making an opening that's meant for letting in and for something to go in and for something to go out. And that's the definition of making a hole in halacha. So he'd be chayev for boiner or makar v'patish, according to the different rishonim. Im lahotzim men aleicha, but if he's doing it only in order to get rid of pus, then potter, then he would be potter because then he's not, then, so one way of understanding it is that one way of understanding it, we discussed yesterday, is again, this would be, our Gemara is saying that would be specifically according to Reb Shimon, Mantana, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab, Reb Shimon, he dama malacha shen, it's really good for potter aleha. So according to that version, again, this would be only according to Reb Shimon, whereas Reb Yehuda would actually say he's chayev. Reb Yehuda, who always says malacha shen, it's really good for, is chayev. He would say chayev in this case. We talked about yesterday that not necessarily, we said yesterday that we learned what Tosfos said, and we discussed what the Rambam says, that maybe not necessarily. Maybe even you could make it work, even according to Reb Yehuda, because you would say, according to Reb Yehuda, you don't consider it a malacha at all to open up a boil where you're not doing it for the purpose of making a Pesach, and therefore it wouldn't be an issue of malacha she'ena tzricha, because it would be mutter altogether, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Rambam, for example, holds that way, or seems to hold that way, because he paskins, on the one hand, generally like Rabbi Yehuda, that malacha she'ena tzricha legofa is chayev. On the other hand, he says that you're allowed to open up a boil in order to remove the pus on Shabbos. For the moment, but then you don't care if the hole closes up again. So you're not, the Rashi described in Amun Aleph at the end of the previous parak, there's two ways of making that hole. You can do it the way that doctors do it, where you make the hole in such a way that it'll stay open. Like nowadays, for example, you go to a doctor with something like that, with a large infection or whatever, he'll cut it like Shesi Ve'er. He'll make a crosswise cut in it so it doesn't heal, so it doesn't close up until it's finished healing. As opposed to you just prick a hole in it or you squeeze it in order to get out the pus or whatever, you don't care if the hole closes right afterwards. Yeah. Okay. So again, according to the version we have in the Gemara over here, that would be specifically according to Rav Shimon. The Ikka Demasni Laha, then there are those who learned what Rav says in connection with yet another din, this that Rav is saying that it's according to Rav Shimon, that's a malacha, she'en etzricha legufa is potter. Hatzad nachash b'Shabbos, the Mishnah says, if a person traps a snake on Shabbos, so if im mis'asik b'shalo yishchenu, if he's getting involved with it and trapping it in order that it shouldn't bite him, potter, then he would be potter. And again, we're not talking, as we said yesterday, we're not even talking when the snake is a deadly one, then of course it would be multiple pikuach nefesh. We're talking even when it's not necessarily going to be deadly, or even if it's not necessarily going to bite him, but there might be tsar involved. So therefore, he's allowed to do it. And if he does it because he wants the snake in order to use it for medicinal purposes, then he'd be chayev. So man tana, again, we can ask who is the tana who says this. So we have three different versions of what Rav, in what connection Rav said that a particular din is only according to Rav Shimon. And again, each one of them, or a number of them, we could say, not necessarily do we have to shtel the mind like Rav Shimon, we could conceivably say, in fact, that they go like Rav Yehuda, because we might not consider them a malacha at all, as we discussed yesterday. Alma Shmuel, another din regarding trapping animals, Shmuel says, Hashola dog min hayam, if a person picks up a fish out of the water, kiven sheyavash by kasela chayev, once a sela is a coin, so once a spot on it, the size of a sela, dries up, chayev, then he's already chayev for killing it, because at that point the fish is no longer going to be able to live anymore. It's not going to be able to revive anymore. Now, what about the fact that he trapped it? So Rashi and Tosfos both explain that we're talking about the fish was already trapped before Shabbos. So Tosfos explains, let's say, for example, that you have, I mean, Rashi and Tosfos both say, so let's say, for example, you have one of these kinds of traps in the water that's like a little basket or something. So suppose you got the fish into that before Shabbos. So now it's already trapped. You can't be chayav for tzedah, taking it out of the water on Shabbos. But you can be chayav for netilas neshama, which is a tolda of the malacha of shochet. So therefore, so once the fish starts drying up, and once it dries up to the size of a sela, then you chayev. Amar Rabbi Yosi bar Oven oven snapiro. Rabbi Yosi bar Oven says specifically that dry area has to be between its fins. When that happens, it means that it's not going to revive again. But if it was anywhere else on the body, not necessarily. Amar Rav Ashi loytema yavish mamish. In fact, Rav Ashi says it doesn't mean it has to be completely dry in order for the year to be chayev. Elak afilu de obed riri. Even when it gets to the point where now we're threads. Oh, good morning, Yaakov. Even you're talking about where threads go from it when you put your finger on it, like it's sticky now. It's starting to dry up and it's like mucusy. And if you put your finger on the dry area and pull, then strings of mucus will come along with it. Then already that's also considered. Rashi says that it's dry enough that you're chayev as well. Once you have an area of a cellar that's dry to that extent. Another din, Omar Bar Hamduri Omar Shmuel, we're holding towards the bottom of Kufzai Omar Beis, five lines from the bottom. Omar Bar Hamduri Omar Shmuel, Hoshit Yodelim Ebehema, here's another din, if a person sticks his hand into the womb of an animal on Shabbos, Vidildil Uber Shabameha, and he detaches the baby that's inside the womb, Chayev, so now he's Chayev. My timer. Now, on what grounds is he chayev? On the face of it, maybe he can't be chayev for natilas neshama because it's a baby inside the womb. It's not alive yet. So on what grounds would he be chayev? Amar Rava Barhamduri Asbarali. So Rava says, the same Barhamduri who said the din in the name of Shmuel, he explained it to me. Lav Amar Rav Sheshes, isn't it similar to what Rav Sheshes said? Hai man betolish kshusa mehizmi vehigi. If a person tears off kshusa, off the thorn bushes that it grows on. Kshusa is a plant. Kshusa is a plant. It's a parasitic plant. It doesn't have roots or anything of its own. It grows by attaching itself to another plant, such as a thorn bush, and gets its nourishment through that plant. So it's a parasitic plant. So if a person tears off the kshus off that plant on Shabbos, mechayev mishum oikodav megidulai, he's chayev on the grounds that he's uprooting something from the place where it grows. In other words, even though it's not attached to the ground, nevertheless we can still be mechayev him on the grounds of the malacha of koitzer. Hachanami mishchayev mishum oikodav megidulai, the same thing over here. He can be chayev on the grounds of that he's uprooting something from where it naturally grows, which would be a tolda of koitzer in the case of the baby inside the womb. So in other words, one way of understanding what the Gemara is saying over here is that an animal is considered gedulei karka. We've touched on this before. For example, there's the question of whether milking a cow on Shabbos is a tolda of the malacha of dosh. If you say that if you say that dosh applies only to gedulei karka, then you have the quote which we discussed before in the Gemara. The question becomes, are cows considered gedulei karka? So one way of looking at it is yes, because they live off grass, which grows from the ground. So that's one way of understanding our Gemara over here also, is therefore, so you chayev for uprooting the baby, for detaching the baby from where it was in the mother's womb, because now you did koitzer. Another way of looking at it, Rishonim talk about, is that maybe it's not an issue of the malacha of koitzer. What the Gemara is, the comparison the Gemara is making is, just like in the case of the kshus plant, where you chayev for koitzer, even though it itself doesn't grow from the ground, it's a parasitic plant, it's only growing from some other plant, and you're still chayev. The same thing over here. You can be chayev for netilas neshama, for removing the neshama of this baby animal, even though you could argue it's still in the womb, it's still a part of the mother, but still it would be the equivalent, in other words, like of cutting off a limb from the mother, uber yarchimayu, after all. And you'd be chayev on those grounds, the same way for netilas neshama, because we would say that the baby, after all, has a certain chayus that it gets from, has a certain chayus that it gets from its mother. Okay. Amar Abaya, here's another din Abaya says in this connection. Hai man betolish pitra me'una dechatzva. If a person detaches mushrooms or fungus from the lip, from the handle or whatever of a pitcher. So you have sometimes a water pitcher. You have a water pitcher or bucket or whatever that you draw water from. So fungus grows on it, fungus or mold or whatever grows on the side of it. So if you take off that mold on Shabbos, mechayev mishum oikodav megidulei, the same thing you chayev for taking something away from where it grows. Even though usually in halacha we consider mushrooms and other such things are not considered gedulei karka. That's why, for example, we say shakol on them. It grows from the air. It grows from the air rather than from the ground. But nevertheless, in this case, he'd be chayev. Masiv Rav Oshia, but Rav Oshia says, how could he be chayev for taking off mushrooms or fungus or whatever from a pitcher of water? We learned before, Hatolish Ma'asetz Nakov Chayev. We said if a person takes out a plant, uproots a plant from a flower pot with a hole, then he's chayev because it gets nourishment from the ground through the hole. V'she'enin Nakov Potter, but if the flower pot does not have a hole, then he's potter, because not really getting nourishment from the ground. So the same thing over here, it's growing on the side of the bucket, so it's not there's no connection between it and the ground. Why should he be chayev? The answer is hosam lav hainu revise. The answer is because over there it's not normal for a plant to be growing in a flower pot. You can grow a plant in a flower pot, but it's not the usual place where you grow plants. Hocha hainu revise, as opposed to over here, this is the normal place where this fungus grows is on the outside of the bucket, of the pitcher, the bucket, whatever. Yeah, because it always gets wet, so therefore it gets moldy. Yeah. The pasta, so it would still be the same problem. So he would have to pour it into another pitcher or something that doesn't have that on it. Or just take it off before Shabbos next time. Well, I mean, look, I mean, if he's just misastic, if he's just like, you know, he's playing around and he accidentally removes it, you can't be mechayev him for that, but nevertheless, you know, he's still have to be careful. Even, you know, even misastic is not a heter, it's a patur, you know, a potter in that case. But, okay. All right. We said in the Mishnah, Chayav Oifchol, we said that when it comes to wild animals and birds that are in a person's Rishus, so Tzedah doesn't apply to them because they're already trapped, but if a person wounds them, then he's Chayav. Even we talked about yesterday that Choyvel in our Mishnah meant when there's meant that the blood collects under the skin. So even so, if we're talking about a creature that doesn't have a tough skin, then there's no such thing because the blood collects under the skin, but it goes and gets reabsorbed back right away, like the equivalent of slapping a person. Only if you wound them, as in you made a bruise, then you'd be chayav because now the blood collects under the skin and it's never going to go back to the way it was before because that blood itself is not going to be reabsorbed into the body. Okay, so. So now we're going to talk about something related to skin of birds, which we're going to bring in our Mishnah. Omer Rav Huna, Kosvin Tfilin Al Gabi Urshal Oif Toher. Rav Huna says you're allowed to write Tfilin, and Rav Ashi was also Sufri Torah and Mezuzas, on the skin of a kosher bird. Omer Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef says, My Kamash Malan. What is Rav Huna trying to tell us? What's the Chiddush? The Islay is Rav Huna just trying to inform us you should know that birds have something that can be considered a skin in Halacha? Taneno, you don't need Rav Huna to tell us that. We said in the Mishnah, Choyvel Ben Chayev, that if you wound a bird on Shabbos, you're Chayev. Evidently, that has to mean that it has a skin, because as we discussed yesterday, if you're talking about a creature that doesn't have a skin that's considered to be separate from the flesh, if you have, let's say, for example, a snake or other kind, according to one opinion, certain ones of the Shmona Shrotzim or whatever, then they have such soft skins that the skin is just basically an extension of the flesh. The blood doesn't get trapped under the skin, and therefore you'd be potter. So if the Mishnah is telling us that birds, you chayev for choyvel, then of course it means they have a skin. So if they have a skin, of course you can write Sifrei Torah on them. What's the Chiddush? Amalei Abaya Tova Kamash Malan. But Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, actually Rabbi Huna is telling us a big Chiddush. If we only had our Mishnah, you would say, okay, yes, the bird has a skin, but not necessarily can you write Tvilan on it. Hava Amina, Kivin de Ispe Nikvi Nikvi Loi. After all, that skin has a lot of little holes in it, because you have the bird's feathers grow through the skin. So you have a lot of tiny holes throughout it. So maybe you can't write on it. We know that a hole in the parchment would make the Sefer Torah or Tfilin or whatever puzzle. So Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav Huna wants to tell us, you don't have to worry about those holes. Why not? Kida Amri B'ma'arava, as they say in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Kol Nekev Shad Yoy Averes Olav Eina Nekev, any hole that is so small that the ink will just pass right over it, then it's not considered a hole. So like this, the holes are small enough that when you're writing with the ink, when you're writing Tfilin or whatever with ink, the ink doesn't drip through the hole. It passes right over it. Well, regular skin is much thicker. I mean, you have regular skin. You only have the hairs grow through it, and the hair, the follicles for the hairs are much smaller, of an animal are much smaller. And especially, by the way, I mean, we're talking about Tfilin over here. We talked about earlier in the Masechta that there are two layers of skin, the two layers of an animal's skin, where you can keep the skin unsplit, and you have Gvil. You can use one layer, which is called klaf, the other layer, which is called duchsistus. We talked about over there the different opinions. What is klaf and what is duchsistus? According to the various opinions we talked about over there, really, when you're talking about the mainstream accepted opinion is that klaf is the outer layer, and you write on the inner side of it, the side that in life was closer to the flesh. And if you're going to write on duchsistus the other way around, you write on the outside. According to the Rambam, it's the other way around. But whatever. In the vast majority of cases, you're anyway not writing on the side that had the hair in life anyway. And even if you did, it's such tiny holes that there's not even a haba. I mean, I think there's a problem, but when it comes to the holes for feathers, which are a little bit larger, you would think there's a problem. And Rav Huna wants to tell us that not, because the ink also just glides right over it. Yeah, by the way, machlok is a poskim, so what happens, for example, so if you hold it up to the light, let's say, and you still see the hole, is that a problem? The Taz says that would still be a problem. Other achronim say even that wouldn't be a problem. Okay. Okay. Mace feed Abzeda. Okay, Abzeda says I have a contradiction. So you're telling me that the skin of a bird is considered skin in Halacha. But we have like this. The Pasuk describes when you're bringing an Oilasa Oif, the Pasuk says that the Pasuk says Vishisa Oise Biknafov, that you after you do Malika on the bird, you take the bird, feathers and all, and you tear it in half, Vishisa, you break it in half, and then you burn it on the Mizbeach. And the word bichnufav means lahachshir asa'ur. The word bichnufav with its feathers means that the skin is also kosher to be brought on the mizbeach. Unlike with animals, where you have to first strip off the skin, with a hifshit asa'ula, with an oila sa'ur, if you don't have to do that. Now, the Isakadaydach Urhu, Sarab Zera, asks the question, if the skin of a bird is considered skin in halacha, heichi marbi lakra, how could the Torah be including it? How could it say that it should be part of the carbon? It should indeed be, just like an animal, where you have to strip off the skin. Tosfos teaches out the question that like this. Now, we know the carbon is brought on the Mizbeach, even with the feathers on. You have the famous Rashi in Vayikra, bringing from Torah's Koyanim, that the burnt feathers smell horrible, but the Torah Davka wants that it should be offered on the Mizbeach with the feathers, because a bird is usually a poor person's carbon, and the Torah wants it to look nice, and the Torah wants it to look as full and as large as possible. But still, Tosfos says, okay, with animals as well, you sometimes have those certain parts of it where the hair, there's certain parts of it where the hair can be offered on the Mizbeach. Namely, you have the head of the animal, doesn't have the skin stripped off it, and you can offer it with hair and all. So you would think maybe the same thing with the bird. Maybe you do have to strip off the skin off most of it, and then the parts where you don't have to strip off the skin, then you'd still have the skin and the feathers. But Reb Zera is arguing what's the logic that the Torah is telling us to not strip off the skin at all? Why should that be? Why should a bird be any different than an animal in that regard? So therefore, wouldn't that show, therefore, that it's not considered skin in halacha? And if it's not considered skin, then you can't write Sifrei Torah and so forth on it. Amalei Abaya la'olam emalach lav erhu. So Abaya answers him, we can tell you that actually it is, that, I skipped a few lines. The Isakad Urhu Heichi Marbilekra. So if it's considered skin, how could the Torah be marbe it and say that you should offer it together with the carbon? Amalei Abai says, what's the problem? Urhu Rabban Rachman Rabye. Okay, yes, it's considered skin in halacha for all purposes, as far as choivel on Shabbos, as far as writing tefillin on it and so forth. In this particular case, the same Torah that told us that it's skin also tells us you should offer it on the Mizbeach together with the carbon and together with the feathers. Okay. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion went the other way around. Amr Abzera, Afanan Nami Tanena, that in the second version of Zerbzera brings a proof that it is considered skin, because we learn in this Braise, the Knuff of Lodabas is Ur, that when it says in the Pasuk that you should offer the bird with its feathers and all, that means to include the skin. So in the second version, Abzera says the opposite of the first version, Iyamet Bishlema Urhu, if you say that the skin of a bird is actually considered skin in halacha, Hainu de Itzuchro Laboya, then that would explain why we need a pasuk to be marbe. You would have thought that a bird should be like an animal in that regard, and you have to take off the skin first. Therefore, the Torah is telling you, Biknuf of Ladabas as a Ur, that you do not, you leave the skin on. But if you were to say that the skin is not considered, if it's not considered skin anyway, if it was considered like the flesh, why would you need a pasuk to be marved? Obviously, you're offering all the flesh, you're offering the whole body of the bird on the mizbeach, minus the mur of a noitza, whatever, minus the crop and the stomach over there, because they contain gezel or whatever, but the rest of it you're offering. So if the skin wasn't considered separate, of course you'd be offering it. There'd be no chiddush. So the very fact that you have to have the word biknah of to include the skin itself teaches us that the skin is considered skin. But Amalei Abaya, in the second version, Abaya does not necessarily. La'olam emalach lav erhu. Actually, you could argue that maybe the skin is not considered skin in halacha. The itzrich, and then we still need a pasuk to tell us that you do offer it with the carbon. Sakhadai dechamina. Otherwise, you would think, given the ispe pirtzi, since it has holes in it, as we just said, that was the whole reason why Rav Huna was telling us that why Rav Huna had to tell us that you can write tefillin on it, even though it has those tiny holes. But still, you would think the fact that it has all those tiny holes moist means it's disgusting, and maybe it shouldn't be going on the mizbeach. The skin has all those little holes in it, so where the feathers were, maybe it's not an attractive thing to be offering on the mizbeach. Well, okay, but the holes are still there, so maybe it would still be considered miyistik. So maybe you should be required to take off the skin from at least part of it. Okay, so again, maybe not from the head, just like you don't with the head of an animal. You might have the head of the animal's skin and all, but maybe with the rest of the bird, you should have to take off the skin. Kamash Malan, and therefore the pasuk would be telling us that not. By the knuffah would be telling us that you don't take off any of the skin. Okay, so that's the bottom line, therefore, is that the skin of a bird is considered skin in halacha. for all purposes, as far as Shabbos, as far as writing tefillin on it, and the fact that you're makriv on the fact that you're makriv on a mizbeach is an exception to the rule. Usually, you're not makriv skin on a mizbeach, but here is an exception, and you do. Okay. Next, b'mine ma'bred rabina merab nachma yitzchak. Mahu lichtiv tefillin agabe ur shel dog tahor. Are you allowed to write tefillin on the skin of a kosher of fish? So animals, yes. Birds, yes. Are you allowed to use fish? Amalei, Sarav Nachmitz, so answers him, Im Yave Eliyahu Hiyomar. If Eliyahu comes and says, then we'll determine based on what he says. So what does that mean? The Gemara says, Mayim Yave Eliyahu Hiyomar. What does that mean? Ilema id isle ur id lesle ur. Do you mean that Eliyahu is going to tell us the halacha of whether the skin of a fish is considered to be skin in halacha? First of all, we have it. We know anyway, as we're going to show. But anyway, Torah loy b'shamayim. We can't pass in halacha based on what Eliyahu decides for us. Eliyahu, remember, wore many different hats. He was a navi and he was also a talmid chacham. As a talmid chacham, he's able to tell us. But then he's just like everybody else. There's no and now that he passed away, anyway, now that he went up to shamayim, so if he comes back down to earth not as a human being, then we can't be learning halachas from him. Torah loy b'shamayim. And if he's doing it as a Navi, for sure not, because a Navi after Moshe Rabbeinu can't be teaching new halachas as a Navi. Ah, yeah, you can do Gili Milsa, so that's what we're going to talk about. So what does it mean? Ilema de id isle'er id lesle'er. Do you mean that he's going to determine for us whether the skin of a fish is considered skin in halacha or not? First of all, we see that it actually has skin. We ourselves can see that the skin is very different in texture than the flesh. So there's no question that it can be considered to have skin in halacha. But oid hotnan, and besides, we have a Mishnah that says that the skin of a fish is considered skin. A Mishnah says that if you have a keli that's made out of fish bones or out of fish skin, such kalim are not makabel tumah. Therefore, if you have such a keli inside an oil mess and there's something inside that keli, then that'll protect the contents from becoming tumah. As the usual rule is, something that's not makabel tumah is able to protect things from inside it from becoming tumah. And the point is, it has to be therefore that we consider the skin to be separate from the flesh. Otherwise, if we consider the skin to be edible like the flesh, we would say it's not matzo because fish flesh itself is edible, so therefore it would be food. Food is makabel tumah. Fish itself, if you have, you know, a piece of gefilte fish or, you know, a piece of salmon or whatever, is makabel tumah just like any other food. So if you had a keli, let's say you had a keli made out of salmon skin, so what, you know, if you didn't say that the skin was considered separate than the flesh, then you would say, of course it's makabel tumah, it's just like the flesh of the salmon. Well, that's the point, in other words. So the very fact that we're saying that fish skin is not makabel tumah implies that it's considered separate from the flesh. So we know that a fish has something that's considered a skin in halacha. An eel skin wallet, yeah. So what would we need Eliyahu to tell us? Ela im yave Eliyahu v'yayma iposka zuam aminei, ilay poska zuam aminei. Rather, what it is we need Eliyahu to tell us, does the smell go away from it or not? Fish has a strong smell. So the question is whether after you tan the fish skin and make parchment out of it, would it still be considered too smelly to be used for Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs? So that we'd need Eliyahu to tell us. That would be more like Gili Milsa Ba'alma. In other words, we ourselves can smell with our noses. Does it have a smell or not? But is that residual smell considered enough of a disqualification or not? We would need Eliyahu to tell that. So that wouldn't be necessarily a matter of halacha. That would be more Gili Milsa Ba'alma. That would be just telling us the facts, and that we can rely on Eliyahu. So he's going to be coming in a goof, but primarily that's the thing. We're talking about that he's going to tell us matters of fact. He's going to be telling us, for example, you know, you have the cases, hey, Munach HaChiyav Eliyahu, for example, right? You know, Reuben and Shimon are arguing. Each one claims, I own this keli or whatever. So Eliyahu will tell us the facts, which one actually owns the keli. He's not going to be telling us the halacha, if he's going to be telling us the halacha, he's just going to be like any other Talmud Chacham. Okay, he has his opinion. Many other people have their, many other Chachamim have their opinions. And we'll go according to the Reuben, as we usually do. Now, With that said, though, the Ran still has a problem with that. He asks still, I mean, isn't that sort of a determination in halacha, whether the Zuama that's left is considered Zuama or not? So he learns differently. He says the Zuama we're talking about is actually a Ruchnistika one. We're going to learn later in the Masechta that the famous expression that when we came to Har Sinai, then the Zuama was taken away from us. The Zuama we have when Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, and that brought in a Zuama, that brought in a Ruchnistika filth into them, and then by Har Sinai that was cleaned up, which is, by the way, one famous explanation why we say in the Haggadah, Ilu Kevonu Lefnei Har Sinai V'Lenos Lanos HaTorah Dayenu, because just coming to Har Sinai itself, the Zuama was already taken away. So the Ran explains our Gemara in the same vein. He says, so the vort is, we can say, the wild animals and the birds were able to be there by Matan Torah, because they can physically come to the Midbar, so therefore the Zuama would be taken away from them, and now therefore you're allowed to use them for Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzos. The fish couldn't come, they're stuck in the water. So now Eliyahu is going to have to tell us, was that Ruchniyistika Zuama taken away from them by Matan Torah or not? That could also be. Okay, whatever, so that I guess that would be part of the question. Yeah. Okay. Lamai said the halacha is you can't because of the suffix. So you can't write tefillin or mezuzahs or whatever on fish skin. Okay. So the Gemara tells in this connection a story. Since we're talking about what kinds of skins you're allowed to write sefer Torah tefillin mezuzahs on, so we have a story in that connection. Shmuel and Kauna have a yasvi aguda de nahar malka. Shmuel and Kauna were sitting by the banks of the river Malka. It's the name of a river in Babel. Shmuel, we know who he was throughout Shas. Kauna was one of the early Amoroyim. We find in particular in Shas that he was an expert in Dine Mominus. We find actually in Gemara and Ksubas. His day job was he was a wine sniffer. His job was people would hire him to go and sniff their wine and see whether it's good quality and whether it's about to spoil and whatever. And then he was his parnasa, and then he was also an expert dayan in Dine Mominus. So the Gemara gives us an example where they were allowed to pay him for sitting in judgment, even though we had a couple of days ago in Rambam Gimel Prokim that a dayan is not allowed to be taking shoychad or taking payment or whatever. But if he's doing it because otherwise he's losing time from his day job, then he's allowed to. Kauna is an example. That's a similar heter as far as when people teach Torah that they get money for it is the same idea. Schai batola, indeed, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so Shmuel and Kauna are sitting over there by the river. Chazinhu lamaya de kodolu va'achiri. They saw that the water was high up. It was in high waves. The water was very disturbed and very in waves. Va'achiri, and it was cloudy. So what does that mean? Omale Shmuel Lakauna. So Shmuel says to Kauna, Gavra Rabba Ka'osi Mamarava, here's what's going on. A great person is coming from the west, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, because this particular river flows from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. In fact, Ben Yehoyada says the river might have been none other than the Pros, V'hanor Harvihu Pros. And it's called Nahar Malka in the sense, because it's the river that borders Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it's like a melech compared to the other rivers in the world. Anyway, so this river flows from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. So the fact that the water is making high waves is because a great person is coming. So it's in his honor. This person who's coming has a stomach ache, has stomach problems. So the water is lifting itself up into large waves in order to welcome him. What does that mean? So Rashi explains that Shmuel is saying, since this person has terrible stomach problems, so while he's on the boat coming over here, he's having to go to the bathroom over the side of the boat. So, in order to protect him, that everybody doesn't see him exposed over there, so the water is making high waves like to hide him while he's going to the bathroom, and also in order to wipe him afterwards. That's how Rashi learns. So the high waves are because of that. The fact that the water was cloudy represents tsar, is because he himself is in a cloudy state of mind because of his stomach pain. So that's what that represents. Zil tohi le'akankane, go smell his barrel, meaning go check him out and see what caliber of Talmud Chacham he is. Now, said not only it's a popular expression, but actually it also played on Kauna's day job, that since Kauna's parnassa was from doing just that, smelling wine barrels to see if they're good quality or not. So now Shmuel tells him, now instead of using your regular nose, your gashmiistic nose to smell wine, now use your ruchniistic nose to sniff out this guy and see what he's like. Now, what does he mean? If he just said that he's a Gavri Rabba, why does he need to check out whether he's a Tamid Chacham? So one thing is, first of all, a Gavri Rabba doesn't necessarily have to be a Tamid Chacham. It could be he has great Maisim Tovim. It could be that he was a Tamid Chacham and he forgot his Torah because of his pain or whatever. So Shmuel wants to find out what he's like now. Now, this is all according to Rashi. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel a different girsa in the Gemara, is that what's going on is Shmuel heard already rumors that there's a great person, that there's a great Talmid Chacham coming on the next boat. Now Shmuel realized what's going to happen on the way here. He's going to need to drink. He's going to drink from the water because the water is cloudy and it has sediment and whatever stirred up in it. Therefore, that's going to cause him stomach problems. Shmuel, after all, was an expert doctor. He knew what happens when you drink bad water. So he realized, therefore, that Shmuel being a doctor, so he's telling Kauna, go find out if this person is a chacham who deserves the kind of kavod, that then I'll bring him to my house and cure him and give him kavod. That's according to Tosfos, what's going on over here. And then Marsha has yet another explanation that the water is lifting itself up and then they're like flowing backwards. The fact that it's flowing backwards is why it's cloudy. Like normally this river flows from Eretz Yisrael from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Now it's flowing the other way in honor of Rab, but because it's flowing backwards, therefore it's cloudy and therefore the same idea. In other words, Rab is going to end up drinking from it and getting sick. So according to Tosfos and according to Marsha, he wasn't necessarily sick before he came, as opposed to according to Rashi, he was already sick on the way there. Could be. Whatever the case. Yeah, that could also be. Okay. So, also Ashkechei L'Rab. So, Kauna went and he found that the Talmid Chacham on the boat is none other than Rab. So, he has to check him out. He has to ask what he's like. Amale, so he starts asking him questions. Minayin she'en kosvin tefillin ela agabe ur behema tahora. How do we know that you're only allowed to write tefillin on the skin of a kosher animal? We learned this actually earlier in the Masechta, because the Pasuk says the Torah of Hashem should be in your mouth, meaning it has to be something that you could conceivably have in your mouth, namely it has to be from a kosher animal. He asked him another question. How do we know that the definition of blood in halacha is that it's red? In the Mishnah, in the Gemara, in Nidah, it talks about that not every kind of discharge that comes from a woman is metame. Only ones that are four particular shades of red plus a shade of black, which, okay, black, the Gemara says over there, was red and then it deteriorated and became black. All the other ones are various shades of red, as opposed to, for example, we said over there, let's say, dam hayorik, blood that's green or yellowish or whatever, is not considered blood in halacha. So where do we know that concept? Kauna asks Rav. The answer is, Shenem of Ayuru Moya Mineged Samayim Adumim Kadom. As it says in the pasuk, we're holding about the middle of the middle size lines. We're holding the third line of the middle size lines. About here actually. So the pasuk describes over there how the Jewish people are fighting against Moav, and they were running out of water, and the Navi Elisha made a nest for them it rained and it filled up pits of water, so they had water to drink. And then it says the Moavim came and they saw in the distance the water, and they saw it from the distance. It looked red because the sun was shining on it. It looked like blood. They thought the armies had killed each other, and they walked in unawares and got completely defeated. The point is that the pasuk says over there that they saw the water red like blood. So we see that the definition of blood in Torah is that it's red. Then he asked him, "Minayin l'milah shemoisim makrim?" He asked him a third question: how do we know that mila is done davka in that place on the genitals? Maybe mila should be done someplace else on the body. So he says, "Nema kan orlase v'nema lahalan orlase," because we make zedor shava from the word orlase. Over here it says, "V'orol zocha ashele yimelus psar orlasei." You have by the mitzvah of orla, it says, "V'aralzem orlasei as period." So you have a Xeda Shopper. Ma lahalon dovash oisepri. Over there, you're talking about a fruit tree that produces fruit. Afkan dovash oisepri. The same thing over here. The mila is done on the part of the body that produces fruit, that produces children. So he asks him, still, how do you know that you learn it like that? Ema liboy, maybe instead of the other end of the Xeda Shava being from, maybe fine, you have Orla said by Mila, but in the other end of the Xeda Shava, instead of being by the mitzvah of Orla, maybe it should be someplace else. Ema liboy, maybe you should say that you learn from the fact that it says Orla in connection with the heart. And the pasuk says you should circumcise the Orla, the covering of your heart. It means get rid of your Yetzirah, but the Torah is using the word Orla in connection with the heart. So maybe Mila takes place on the heart. Maybe like you cut away a little flesh over there on the chest or something. Or Ema Ozna, maybe it means you do it on the ear. You have a pasuk in Yirmiyah, their ear is stopped up. They don't want to hear, they don't want to listen to the words of the Nevi'im. Yeah. So the answer is, Dunin or Lossay Tama me or Lossay Tama. The answer is, we're going to learn where it says the word or Lossay in full, his Orla, from another place where it says his Orla or its Orla. That in Dunin or Lossay Tama me or Lossay Tama. You want to learn from or Loss Lavavchem or Arei La Oznam. In both of those cases, the word Orlas is an adjective or something that goes with another word. You need another word to complete it. Orlas, which Orla of Lavavchem? Which what is Orla on them is their ear, as opposed to Orlasa is a complete word by itself, his Orla. And the same thing about the tree, his or its Orla, so therefore that's where to learn the Xeder Shabbat. So we're gonna discuss soon, yeah. As far as the first one, we had it earlier in the Masechta. We mentioned it earlier in the Masechta. We mentioned another point also anyway, like Hochshul Malachas Shemayim Ela Tahorim Bilvad, that any time you're doing something for Hashem, for example, building the Mishkan, it has to be from Tahorim. The second one about the blood, yes, we actually learned in the Gemara and Nida as well. And the third one, we're going to be discussing now that there are actually a few different opinions with how we learn that. Ultimately, it's the kind of thing. I mean, the Rambam writes, you know, it's the same kind of thing. For example, you have a Gemara and Sukkah that talks about how we know what an esrog is, how we know, for example, that it's not a peppercorn or something. And then I'm right. It's not that, you know, until they had these drushes, they didn't know what fruit to take on Sukkot. They always knew. It's part of the Torah that Moshe taught us from Har Sinai, from Hashem. But the Chacham are looking for a source in the Pasuk for it. So the same thing over here. We know, obviously, from the times of Avraham Avinu, Orla, a mila is done on the Orla, on the genitals. It's not done on the heart. It's not done on the ear or what have you. But the Chacham are looking for places where we see that from natural. Okay. Amale. So Rav finally says to this person who's asking him all these questions, "My Shimcha, what's your name?" He says, "Kauna." Amale. So Rav says to him, "Yehei Rav, the typical Kauna of Ene. May it be Hashem's will that a Kauna, that a horn comes out into your eye, meaning like a growth or something that overgrows his eye." In other words, he was a little bit peeved at Kauna for bothering him with so many questions, especially when Kauna knows that Shmuel told him before that Rav is having stomach problems, so he's not feeling well. So what are you doing hacking me with so many questions? So he asked him these questions, yeah, one after the other, and therefore after a while Rav gets a little offended on it. With that said, though, there are a couple of other interesting explanations of what's going on over here and and why Dafka Kauna picked these questions. There's an interesting explanation from the Tavuris Shur, one of the major Achronim, which he talks about that he explains, based on a Gemara in Yuma, that the original reason why Rav ended up leaving Eretz Yisrael and moving to Babel had to do with a tiny little bit, on Rav's level, a tiny little bit of gaiva. That's a story in Gemara Yuma. We'll get to it, Bez Hashem, in a year from now or whatever. Anyway, so therefore, the Torah sure says, so now Shmuel wanted to find out, he's sending Kauna not just to find out whether Rav is a Talmud Chacham. He knows already, by reputation, that Rav is a great Talmud Chacham. He wants to find out, though, whether he still has that shminis of gaiva, or whether he agrees now that gaiva is something that needs to be completely rejected. And he explains that all the three questions over here have to do with that. So in the end, Rav is saying, like, you know, how you talking? You're suspecting me that, yeah. That and also another one in Pesher Agadta, he brings an explanation that all of the questions had to do with the question, okay, so Rav is now moving from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. Is he planning to just settle in and retire and become a private citizen, or is he going to be teaching Torah to people, which he has? He's such a tremendous Talmid Chacham, he needs to be teaching people. So therefore, so he explains all these three questions are related to that, and therefore he says, so at the end, Rav is offended. What do you mean? You're suspecting me that you think that you think I would stop teaching Torah? You think I would just keep it all to myself? And therefore he speaks harshly to Karna. Or actually, Peshur Agata says, maybe actually it wasn't. Maybe it's actually a compliment. Maybe he's saying that you should have horns, like you should have the ability to be a great Talmid Chacham and be like an animal that's able to gore with its horns, which is a metaphor for a Talmid Chacham who's able to hold his own in a discussion in Torah. Okay, an O should come into his eyes, whatever. Yeah, it was also a play on words of his name, Karna, yeah. Okay, fine. Continues the Gemara. Well, so if Eile Shmuel Abese, eventually, so now Shmuel is convinced that Rav is somebody that he should honor, so he brings him into his house. As we said before, Shmuel is a doctor, so he wants to heal Rav from his stomach problems. Uchlen Nam Desare, he gave him to eat barley bread, which makes a person have to go to the bathroom more. The Kosa Deharsina, he also gave him Kosa Deharsina, which is a dish that involves you take fish and you fry it together with oil and together with its own oil, its own fat actually, and flour. So it comes out a little bit. I guess it comes out sort of like you fill the fish or fish patties or whatever. Anyway, it was a common thing that they ate in those days. We'll have later on, and when we talk about later on in the 16th Perek about the mitzvah of covered Shabbos, for example, of eating something special with covered Shabbos. So it talks about even a poor person who can't afford any more than cost of the house, and now at least you should have that as something special for Shabbos. Anyway, so that also, cost of the house, and is also the kind of thing that makes a person have to go to the bathroom more. The Ashkia Shichra, he gave him beer to drink. The Loy Achvile Besakise, and all that time he wasn't showing Rav where the bathroom is, with the purpose ki heichi dilashtalshel. That way he'll have. So like this, the problem was Rav's stomach problems were basically that he was constipated. So like this, it'll cause him like this all that food sticking out in his stomach for a while that makes him have to go to the bathroom, and not being able to, it'll liquefy all the food, and it'll make it that it'll be much more likely that when he goes that'll get everything out and he'll be cured. But Rav didn't understand what was going on. He thought that they were doing it just in order to cause him more pain. Layit Rav v'omar. So Rav cursed and said, "Manda mitzaron, whoever is causing me this tzar, loy luk mui loy boni. He should not have sons that live after him." V'chein haba, and unfortunately, that's what happened. So he didn't realize that this was Shmuel who was doing the same, and he didn't realize that Shmuel was doing it for a positive purpose. So Ben Yehoyada says, one idea is he thought, having just criticized and cursed Karna, he thought that now whoever this is, he didn't realize it was Shmuel, is now trying to like get back at him for doing that to Karna, and therefore he reacted so strongly and cursed. But he didn't realize that it was actually being done for his benefit. He didn't know that Shmuel is a doctor. He didn't know that this is the great Amor to Shmuel. Yeah. Later on, actually, the Gemara mentions in a couple of places, after Rav realized his mistake, then from then on, he used to show Shmuel extra covered, even though in Rav was older than Shmuel and he was a much greater Talmid Chacham than Shmuel. But after this, to make up for having mistakenly cursed him, from then on, he used to give Shmuel more honor. Like when they would go together to the same place, he would allow Shmuel to enter ahead of him to make up for that. But b'chein haba, that Shmuel only had, we find in a few places in the Gemara about Shmuel's daughters, we never find that Shmuel had sons. Yeah. That's the point. In other words, if he had children, then they passed away young, is the point, yeah. Ben Yehoyada explains the connection is because we know if a person is not able to go to the bathroom when they need to, it can make them sterile. So therefore, Rav thought that whoever's doing this is Davka doing it in order to try to make him sterile, so therefore that was the call that they used. All right, getting back to, now we said in the course of this discussion that one of the questions Karna asked Rav is, how do we know that the Mila takes place at the genitals? So Rav had given the Gzeder Shava from the word Orlo. So the Gemara says, Ketanoi. It's actually Machlokas Tanoim where we learn it from. A Braisa says, Minayim L'Mila Shav Oisim Makim. How do we know that the Mila takes place in Oisim Makim? So the same Gzeder Shava that Rav said, Nemer Kan Orlo Se V'Nem L'Halon Orlo Se. Ma L'Halon Dabash Oisa Pri Af Kan Dabash Oisa Pri Divir Rav Yoshia. So Rav Yoshia is saying the same Drosha that in the next generation Rav is saying. Rav Nosson Omer Ein Etzorich. Rav Nosson says you don't need that Gzeirah Shavah. I have another way of learning it. Harehu Omer V'Oral Zocher Ashelo Yimelis Psaro Lasei. The pasuk says a male oral who does not circumcise the flesh of his orla, then he gets kares. So why does it have to say zacher when it already says earlier hima lachem kol zacher? It means mokum shenikah ben zacherus lanachrus. It means that mila takes place at the part of the body where you can recognize whether it's a boy or a girl, namely the genitals. Now, of course, you know, when people get older, there are other differences between boys and girls as well. But at where mila takes place when the baby is 8 days old, at that point, that's the only difference. Yeah. Okay. Getting back to we said about what kinds of skins you're allowed to write your Sefer Torah Tefillin and Mezuzas are, let's talk about that. Turn it on. Kosvin Tefillin Agabe Ur Behema Tehora. You're allowed to write Tefillin on the skin of a kosher domestic animal, like a cow. Val Ur Chaya Tehora, also on the skin of a kosher wild animal, like a deer. Val Gabe Ur Nevelus Atrefus Shalahem. You can also write it on the skin of a kosher animal which was Nevela or Trefa. So even though the animal itself, you're not allowed to eat, but you're allowed to use its skin for Tefillin and Mezuzas. Vinichrochus Besairon, also the parashias of the tefillin have to be wrapped up in hair. So that's, we know that you go to the sofer when he's making tefillin for you or for your bar mitzvah son or whatever, you can watch the process over there. They take each parasha, they wrap it in a few strands of hair. Usually they usually use the hair from the tail of a cow because it's long and that way it's easy to use. So they wrap it in a few strands of hair. Then they put a piece of parchment over it to cover it. They wrap it in another strands of hair because there's different opinions whether the hair is supposed to be. You have two different halachos on Moshe Mitzrayim. One is that they have to be wrapped in a blank piece of parchment before they're put into the batim. Another one is they have to be wrapped in hair. And then the machloek is supposed to give which one is supposed to come first, so therefore we go to both of them. And then afterwards you have, so each parasha is wrapped up like that, and then we have, as we know, if you look on the front of the tefillin shorosh, you can see a little bit of the hair sticking out in a hole over there. It's an easy way to tell the difference between Rashi and Rebbeinu Tam's tefillin, because Rashi has it on towards one side, between two of the side batim, and Rebbeinu Tam has it in the middle. Anyway, so you also have to use the hair of a kosher animal for that purpose. Vinitporis begidon, also when you're sewing up the tefillin, when you're sewing the ureus of a Sefer Torah one to the other, you have to use the sinews of kosher animals. Same thing, you take the nerves and you spin them into thread, and that's the thread that they use. In fact, it's halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim that tefillin has to be like that. They have to, the parashiyos have to be wrapped up in hair from a kosher animal, and they have to be sewn up using gidin from a kosher animal. But continues the Braisa, Avol ein kosvin lo yagabe ur behema tmeya. You're not allowed to write Sefer Torah tefillin mezuzas on the skin of a non-kosher animal, like a horse or whatever. The lo yagabe ur chaya tmeya, or on the skin of a wild non-kosher animal, like an elephant. Needless to say, you can't write on the skin of a nevela or tray for non-kosher animal. You can't wrap up the parashias with their hair. And you can't use their gidim for sewing up the tefillin or the Sefer Torah. This question, now this that we're saying that you're allowed to write Sefer Torah, Tefillin and Mezuzas on the skin of a Nevela or Trefa, so that a certain Baitusi once asked Rabbi Yeshua HaGausi this. Rabbi Yeshua HaGausi is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. You have the famous story when Rabbi Akiva was in jail, where the Romans would allow one of his Talmidim to come and bring him food and water. It's a story in the Gemara and Erevin. And usually he would have enough water for Natilus Yadayim and afterwards to drink. And one time one of the guards intercepts Rabbi Yeshua HaGausi and pours out most of the water. And by the time he comes to Rabbi Akiva, there's very little left. And Rabbi Akiva says, I'm still going to use that little bit of water for Natilus Yadayim before I eat bread, rather than be over on Divrei Chachamim. If it means I don't have enough water to drink, okay, I don't have enough water to drink. And in the end, they brought him more water. But anyway, the point is Rabbi Yeshua HaGausi was a close Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. So the story's in Gemara Erevin, so we'll get to it in a couple of months, Bez Hashem. Anyway, so this Baitusi asked Rabbi Yeshua HaGausi, Minayin Shein Kosvin Tefillin Al Ur Behemoth Meah, how do we know, Taka, that you're not allowed to use the skin of a non-kosher animal to write tefillin? So does he say, the same thing as Rav said before, that you have to have, it has to be written on something that could conceivably be in your mouth, namely from a kosher species. So he asks him, by that logic, you shouldn't be able to write them on the skin of a nevela or treifa either, because you can't eat those. Amalei, so Rabbi Shua Agassi tells him, Em shalach ha-mashal, I will give you a mashal, ma davadayma, what is it like? L'shnei b'nei adam sh'nishaivu ha-rigal ha-malchus. Imagine you have two people who are chayev, who the government decided had to be executed. Echad hoge melech ve'echad hoge is proclitor. One of them was killed personally by the king. The other one is killed by the executioner. Which one of them is on a higher level? Obviously, the one of the king, kills him, has to be on a higher level. So it's the same logic. In other words, an animal that's a nevela or a trefa, in other words, it died b'day shemayim, so to speak, like it was killed by Hashem himself, as opposed to by the executioner or by a person shechting it. Tosfos asks, okay, so what happens and if a human being kills an animal, what do you say then? Okay, the answer is that once we're saying that if an animal dies, then you're allowed, that it's nevela, that it died on its own, then you're allowed to use its skin, so it shows everybody we don't care how it died. Ultimately, we don't care whether it was b'day shemayim or b'day adam. So it could have been, so it was capable of being shechted kosher in every. So he says, Elam after you, oh, okay, by that logic, then you should be allowed to eat them. If you're telling me that a nevela or trefa is on a higher level than an animal that was shechted, then you should be allowed to eat it. What do you mean? The Torah said you can't eat nevela. What do you mean you can eat them? Amalei kalos. So the Baitusi was very impressed. He says, very nice. Kalos is a Greek word meaning beautiful. So what's going on over here? HaKosev in Ein Yaakov has a very interesting explanation. He says, Rabbi Yeshua HaGausi is trying to explain to the Baitusi. Let me explain to you. You're Baitusi. You believe in Torah Shebichsav, not Torah Shebapet. But let me explain to you how Torah works. It's not that you guys have this impression that if you have a mitzvah in the Torah, which you don't understand, then you know you're gonna ignore it, or you're gonna reinterpret it or whatever in order to fit with your lifestyle. We don't do like that. If we have something that says black letter in the Torah, lo yisaychu kol nevela, then there's no playing around with it. Lo yisaychu kol nevela, period. Whatever kind of logic, whatever kind of seichel we could come up to say with, yeah, but a nevela or trefa is on a higher level, doesn't matter. The Torah tells us otherwise. When it comes to Laman, to Yeturah, Sashem Beficha, where after all, the Torah is not spelling out that it must be something that you can actually eat right now, and after all, you can't eat the skin of an animal anyway, it's not really edible. So therefore, so that's part of Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Peh, we're able to use, that Hashem wants us to use our human brains in order to understand what the Torah is saying, and therefore we can understand. Therefore, we can use logic on that to say that the Nevelo Trefa, in a certain sense, is on a higher level than an animal that was shechted, because so to speak, it was killed by Hashem himself, and therefore that we should be allowed to use it. So David, the guy was very impressed by that explanation of how Yiddishkeit works, of how Torah works, and that's why he said he answers with his Greek expression kalos. Okay. Mishnah says. Now we talked about in the previous Mishnah about the Malacha of Tzedah. Now we have the Malacha of Tzedah, as we said yesterday, is the first Malacha of a unit of Malachas that has to do with preparing parchment to write a Sefer Torah. You have Atzad Tzvi, Ashoichdei, Hamoichoi, Hamabdei. You have a couple of Malachas that involve tanning the skin and preparing it to use for leather. So now we're going to be talking about a Din Drabbanan that has to do with this concept of tanning. The Mishnah says, Ein oisin hilmi b'Shabbos. You're not allowed to make hilmi, which is salt water or brine, on Shabbos. Like the kind that you would use for pickling. Aval oisahu es mea melech, but you are allowed to make salt water. We'll see in the Gemara what the distinction between hilmi and salt water is. V'toivah ben pitoy, you're allowed to make that salt water and dip your bread in it. V'noisim l'secha tabshil, or put that salt water into a cooked dish on Shabbos in order to flavor it. Amar Rabbi Yosi, said Rabbi Yosi, says, what do you mean? You're not allowed to make hilmi, but you're allowed to make mei melach. V'aloi hu hilmi ben meruba ben mor. Whether you make a lot or whether you make a little, either way, it's the same thing. What do you mean? Are you going to say with other kinds of malachas as well that you're not allowed to do a lot, but you're allowed to do a little? The Eluhain mei melach. So in other words, so we'll see in the Gemara, what does Rabbi Yosi say? Is he saying you're allowed to make a large amount or a little amount? Or is he saying, okay, you can't even make a little amount? We'll see in the Gemara. The Elohein mei melach hamutarin. So what kind of salt water are you allowed to make on Shabbos? Noisin shemen lachatchila l'secha mayim l'secha melach. If you start by putting in oil into the water or into the salt, and the point is, if you put the water and the salt together first, then you have a very strong concoction, because the salt mixes very easily with the water, and therefore you have a very strong thing. The point of all of this is that if you're making that kind of salt water, the problem is that it looks like ma'abed. It looks like the malacha of tanning, because part of the malacha of tanning is that you prepare a mixture like that and use it to soak the skins in. So therefore, so Rashi learns that that would be the problem of Ma'abed. You have the Rambam writes a different thing, that it's more like cooking, because after all, part of cooking is to prepare salt water or brine like that. Anyway, the point is that so what happens though if you put in the oil together with one of the other ingredients first? Now, when you have the salt and the water together, and the water together, they're not going to mix as effectively. Therefore, it's not going to be so similar to the kind of thing that you use for pickling or for canning skins or whatever. And therefore, that would be mutter. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. My Kalmar, what does the Mishnah mean? What's the difference between Hilmi and Meimelach? And between Hilmi and regular salt water, Amar of Yehuda Mishmol Hachakama Ein Oisin Mei Melach Merubin. You're not allowed to make a large amount of salt water. Aval Oisin Hu Mei Melach Muatin, but you're allowed to make a small amount at a time. So the amount that you need for now means that you need for the current meal. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, therefore, so you're not allowed to make enough that you would on Shabbos enough that you would need for two meals, but you're allowed to make for the current meal. Okay, then we said Amar Rav Yosi Ba'aloyu Hilmi Ben Merubin Ben Muat. Then we said Rav Yosi says it's Hilmi regardless, whether it's a lot or a little. So Ibayelahu Rav Yosi Lesser Olahatir. What is Rav Yosi coming to tell us? Is he coming to tell us to say it's also to make even a smaller amount, or is he saying it's mutter even to make a larger amount? Amalei Rabba, Hami de Katani, Amar of Yehuda, Lahafir. So Rabbi Yehuda said it must be that Rabbi Yosi is coming to be Matir. Midalai Katani, Rabbi Yosi Oisir, because otherwise it would have said explicitly, Rabbi Yosi says it's also. Now, of course, it also doesn't say explicitly Rabbi Yosi Matir, but Marsha explains, since the Tanakama had just said that you're allowed to make Mei Melach, then if Rabbi Yosi meant that it's actually also, he should have said so explicitly that it's also. Like this, if he doesn't say Rabbi Yosi Matir, okay, it could mean that he's just agreeing with the Tanakama, but the fact that it doesn't say Rabbi Yosi Oisir, which would be the more expected thing after the Tanakama says something is Mutter, implies that he's Matir. What do you mean, though? The Sefer of the Mishnah continues that the following kind of salt water is mutter, and the pastures, that is according to Rabbi Yosi, Miklal de Rabbi Yosi Lesser, implying that Rabbi Yosi is saying otherwise it's also to make salt water, unless you mix in the oil first before one of the other ingredients. Ela Amar Rabba Lesser. So Rabba says, no, what Rabbi Yosi means is just to make salt water is also to mix water and salt on Shabbos is also whether you're making a little or a lot. V'chein Amar Rabbi Yechanan Lesser, and Rabbi Yechanan says the same thing. Rabbi Yosi is coming to tell us it's also whether you're making a lot or a little, unlike the Tanakama, who says that it's okay if you're making a little. Okay. We learn similarly in a braisa. You're not allowed to make a large amount of salt water, which you would use then to put into something that you're pickling inside a gistera. So a gistera, we've learned before, is a broken earthenware keli. So often when you have, it's too broken to use for regular purposes, but you'll still use it as a large jar to pickle things inside. You actually have a Mishnah in Kalim that mentions along those lines. If you have, let's say, a large glass jar that broke and the opening of it is still big enough to be able to get your hand in and out without cutting on the glass, then people will keep that kind of things around and use them for pickling vegetables in it. So you're not allowed to make a large amount of salt water, that the kind that you would use in order to pickle things in the gistera. Aval oisahu mei melach mu'atin, but you're allowed to make a small amount of salt water. Va'oichal behen pita v'nosen secha tapshul. You're then allowed to use that to dip your bread in or to pour into a tapshul. Amar Rav Yosi. So now in the Braisa, Rav Yosi, we see clearly in the Braisa what Rav Yosi holds. V'chi mipnesha alolam merubin v'alolam mu'atin, alolam asurin v'alolam mutarin. What do you mean? Is it because in one case you're making a little, and in the other case you're making a lot, therefore one should be osur and one should be mutter? What's the logic? People are going to say, with other kinds of malachas, you're not allowed to do a large amount, but you're allowed to do a small amount. Now, ela elu ve'elu asurin, so here in the Braisa, Rav Yosi clearly says that it means that both of them are osur. The elu hey mei melach hamutarin. What's the only way it would be mutter? Says Rabbi Yosi, noisen shemen umelach. You put oil and salt, oy shemen umayim, or you put oil and water, and then you mix in the other ingredient. And that way, again, it prevents the water and the salt from mixing so effectively. So therefore, you don't have a mixture that's strong and is like ma'abed or that's like ma'abed or like cooking or whatever. The bottom line is, in other words, says Rabbi Yosi, you're not allowed to put in the water and the salt first, and then put in the oil, because then you first have something that's similar to ma'abed, and only then you add in the oil, and that would be awesome. So the Gemara says, as in Snoin v'Esrig Simen, we're going to have three statements that are we have a way of a key word from each one of them. Tani Rav Yehuda bar Chaviva, Ein Oisim Mei Melach Azin. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to make strong salt water. My Mei Melach Azin. What do we mean by strong salt water? Rabba Rav Yosef Abba Dami Tavayu Kol Shab Beit Tzafa Behen, where it's so salty that an egg will float in it. But Kama, how much is that? I'm going to buy it. Trey tilted milcha, the tilted maya. When you have 2/3 salt and 1/3 water. So that's the kind of thing. That's strong enough. So in other words, most Rishonim understand these are two separate things. Number one, you're not allowed to make a large amount of salt water, as we said before. Large meaning the amount for two meals or more. Other Rishonim, by the way, say the reason why you're not allowed to is because it looks like you're preparing on Shabbos for after Shabbos. Anyway, so that. And also, even if you're making a small quantity, it can't be such strong salt water. This is relevant when Pesach comes out on Shabbos. If you forgot to prepare the salt water for the Seder before Shabbos, you're allowed to prepare it on Shabbos because it's for the next meal, but you can't make it too strong. You have to make it fairly weak so you don't have this problem. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Lamai Abdullah, why would you make such strong salt water? Usually you would make such kind of salt water in order to put in muyas. You would mix it with fish juice and you'd have like a kind of dip or a sauce that you can use on food. Okay. You're not allowed to salt radishes or eggs on Shabbos. Because again, it's like you're fixing it, you're correcting, you're improving the food. It's a tolda of ma'ab. Now midaraisa wouldn't be midaraisa ma'ab. It doesn't apply to food, but midrabanan we're applying it to food as well. Rav Chizkiya b'shmei da'abaya, Rav Chizkiya in the name of Abaya says no. Snoin osir obeitza mutaras. The difference is a radish. It would be osir because the salt actually takes away the sharpness of the radish. So therefore, it's actually improving the food. As opposed to with eggs, it's just to give it a salty taste, to bring out the taste of the egg. Therefore, that would be mutter. Amar Rav Nachman, Meresh Hava Malachna Fugla. Originally, Rav Nachman says, I used to salt radishes on Shabbos. Amina Afsudi Kam Afsidnale. I thought that salting them is not improving them, it's making them worse. The Amar Shmuel, Fugla Chofa Mali. Because we see that Shmuel says that sharp radishes are better. So if the salt weakens the potency of the radish, then it must mean that you're allowed to salt it on Shabbos. It wouldn't be ma'abed. Kiven the shmaina lahad dechi also ula amav ma'arava ma'achi kishri. Then when I heard what Ula said, when Ula came from Eretz Yisrael, he said in Eretz Yisrael, they salt piles and piles of radishes and then they eat them. So we see that salt does improve them. Mimlach loy malach. Now, so from now on, I don't salt them in groups on Shabbos. Tavuli vadi matbilna, but I do dip them one at a time into salt and eat them. So the actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch, you have two different opinions in Shulchan Aruch. One is that you're allowed to salt, for example, a bunch of radishes when they're in front of you, and then you're just eating them one at a time. Some of them are sitting in the salt for a while till you get to them. That's okay, because it's all for the same soda. The other opinion is that no, you would have to salt them one at a time. And the in Shulchan Aruch it says the common minhag is that way. So you're allowed to salt them or dip them into salt one at a time and eat them, but not two or more at a time, which is what the Gemara is saying over here. That's when it comes to radishes or things like that, where the salt actually improves them, as opposed to things like eggs or meat or whatever, where the salt is not really to improve them, just in order to give them a salty flavor. That you're allowed to salt them on Shabbos, unless you're salting them for the purpose of preserving them, and that you're not allowed to. Okay. Shkoyach, everyone.